This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is exactly 7:05 in the evening, and well, let's talk about this. Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad recently did an exclusive interview with the South China Morning Post, where he addressed several China-related issues.
The most pertinent, of course, being the ECRL. He said that he would give the green light to the project if the Chinese contractor agreed to a significant price reduction. There isn't a specific number or amount that he's given. Tun M was a little bit skittish on this, but he said that it should be cheaper than or close to the cost of cancelling the project. However, he admits that it's going to be very difficult to come to a resolution soon.
So previously, it was reported that he wanted the project scrapped. And after a series of miscommunications from the government, Tun is now the only person allowed to publicly speak about the ECRL. On another note, he was also asked to pick between China and the US. Who did this? Who made it a Team Edward, Team Bella situation? He said that if he was forced to do so, he would prefer the economic largesse of Beijing, citing the current unpredictability of America.
So on the relationship with China, Malaysia will make its own independent decisions and won't be affected by what Tun M calls Western scaremongering over Huawei and the Belt and Road Initiative. It's a purely economic consideration. Tun said that for now, we have to accept that China is close to us and there was a lot to benefit from China's growing wealth and market. But he added, politically, of course, we are not attracted towards a system of government that is very authoritarian.
So we're going to be speaking to Koh Yu Ling, an independent political economist with Sergi Enam Advisors. In fact, we have her on the line. Yu Ling, thank you so much for joining us. The Prime Minister has said that if forced to choose, Malaysia would favour China over the US. What do you make of this statement?
Well, I think it's not surprising amidst a lot of uncertainty that's emanating from the US side and Trump. It seems quite logical, to look at what Malaysia has with China. I mean, these are issues which are pending, and it's good to focus on this because these are very substantial, big new economic ties there that have to be resolved and addressed. I guess we also have a new economic action council or committee. So I think things are moving more into place to look at things systematically.
What do you think is guiding his less hawkish view towards China?
I think when Prime Minister Mahathir, then in the opposition, was kind of hawkish on China, I think the whole economic world trade circumstances were a lot more settled. Now we're in a situation of a lot more uncertainty. Trump's been driving that. Of course, arguably, people have been saying that he's not getting what he wanted out of it in terms of the U.S. Trade deficit situation. So that kind of pushes him to do a lot of things. So under those kind of circumstances, it's probably a good idea, and I think this is what the Prime Minister is doing, is really addressing the big new economic ties with China and stabilizing those situations after being rather hawkish. I think, there's obviously a need to address it. So, one has to look at what's at the table what might have been hawkish now has to be conciliatory.
Is there good reason or cause for Malaysia choosing not to favour the unpredictable United States?
Well, I think trade and economic ties just flow as they are. And of course, who benefits and who loses, that remains to be seen. But there's obviously clear hope that there is some benefit, ironically, because of investors and traders wanting to put their eggs in more baskets. So ASEAN has been eyeing to be a beneficiary, frankly. And in a way, this also may drive China to also diversify and offshore more of their investment. So it's kind of uncertain, but then there's kind of hope for benefits at the same time. So it remains to be seen how things are going to play out because Malaysia also after the May elections, that gives a bit of pause as well for foreign investors to understand the administration's goals and even who to talk to.
Right, but on the other hand, is there an unpredictability to favouring China?
Well, China is, I think it appears a lot more stable, at least at the high level. But, you know, if we look at individual subsectors and things, we can see things swinging as well. I mean, if you look at tourism, there's China's ability to, as it were, turn the tap higher or lower. I think, you know, we saw a 30% downswing at one point. Some felt even worse that it was a 50%. Maybe it depends on which sector you're in. So, you know, things like that can matter a lot. And I think for even things like vegetable oil imports, I think we're hoping to be in the good books, as it were. But, you know, if you look at what China has done with regard to canola oil from Canada, you know, it also can affect those kind of imports with trade standards on, you know, food safety and things like that. So what's unpredictable kind of varies a fair bit, I think.
Perhaps it's still a little bit too early, but, you know, Dun M in that interview with SCMP basically said that he wants investments, but doesn't necessarily want people from China living in Malaysia. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, this is quite fascinating. I think it harks back to something that we talked to a while back as well with BFM. It's really this forest city issue and this expectation of residency permits for people who bought the units. You know, I was just looking back at some of the news, and it was really pretty much in September when these issues were a bit hotter. You know, essentially, you know, the Prime Minister talked about 3 million Chinese nationals coming here. I'm just going to quote him. I'm certain if we bring in 3 million more people from China, we will lose our place. The rich among them will buy our land. We will be moved further from the city until we have to live next to the jungle. So, I mean, it's that kind of talk that was happening back in September. And around the same time, you might recall that there were also issues about asking Alliance Steel to tear down this high perimeter wall that was kind of called the Great Wall of China in Kuantan. And this one is the issue of, I think, about they have residential blocks there for about 5,000 people. But of course, I mean, the company has clarified that they have 2,600 Malaysian employees at that time. So that's about half. But I mean, these are, you know, some of the high key issues which were discussed a couple of months ago, which maybe is still on the mind.
Is this about manufacturing?
Yeah, the manufacturing side, I think, is probably one of the biggest would be the Alliance Steel example, with about 5,000 jobs, half of them Malaysian employees. And, you know, this is done in a style which is maybe a bit more unusual from other industrial investments, because the company has quite a large compound, a 700-plus acre compound and 17 residential blocks. So, I mean, these kind of very big campus sites are obviously quite common in China and elsewhere, but maybe a bit less so in Malaysia. I mean, if I compare it to, say, Pasir Gudang, from some of the estimates there, there's quite a lot of factories. And if we count it, it's about 100, on average, employees per factory in Pasir Gudang. So, I mean, 5,000 is quite a lot. And maybe that feels unusual in Malaysia to have such a big scale. But of course, the investment was big as well. It was 5.6 billion ringgit for you know, modern steel plant to come in. If you look at other Chinese manufacturing FDI, you know, there's also investments in steel. Well, this is a steel example. I think there's others being eyed. There's solar, glass, plastic recycling, and other sectors as well. You know, maybe those won't employ quite as many people.
Hypothetically, if this statement, right, being Team China instead of Team USA, if it were to guide our trading and economic principles, how would this affect our local industries?
Malaysian industries, you know, sort of see China market and say the Western market as rather different. I think if you recall from the TPPA, there was a lot of discussion about it. Now, of course, it's without the US, but you know, there's still hope that it'll proceed quite strongly. But you know, there were issues about labor standards, about environmental standards, and other non-economic issues, which then, of course, worried our industries in terms of their upgrading and their compliance with that. There's a view that China's trade is a lot more pragmatic, with less of such encumbrances. But I think that really doesn't mean that China doesn't have its own standards. I mean, say, for example, on food safety, China has moved very strongly since they had certain scandals a couple of years ago. And in fact, China has, at least from the customs viewpoint, they have extended a state-related enterprise, CCIC, which is to do with traceability and certification, so that products that go into China are also having the right kind of certification and, of course, China's own ways on that. But I think this highlights that I think China is also moving along the track of, let's call it, non-tariff issues. And quite often as an exporter, we sort of start to perceive it as non-tariff barriers. So I'm not sure that China ultimately is going to be hugely different on certain issues. But of course, it may differ on the type of non-tariff issues that they are concerned about, whether it's labor or food safety or environment. I mean, there'll be different emphasis.
And back to the ECRL, it appears Tun M's views have also softened, that Malaysia will be willing to take it on should the cost be significantly reduced. I get the impression that we will go ahead with it if the cost of doing it is closer to the compensation cost of cancelling the project. Where do you think we're at with the deal at this point?
Yeah, the ECRL is such an interesting case. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we hadn't heard anything for a while, and then we had Tun Daim Zainuddin commenting that it's still proceeding. And of course, we had a certain flap after that, right? If you recall, the finance minister, Lim Guan Eng, and economic affairs minister, Azmin Ali, they were talking about cancellation or not cancellation. And I think there was even an alleged document on cancellation, which of course, Prime Minister has pointed out could have been doctored. So, I mean, that was quite a flap a little while back. But, if we push that aside, really, I think the PH government is really trying to right size and right price projects. And this, of course, includes changes in specifications. So very, very broadly, I'm not sure, are we looking at 40% cuts as a very, very rough benchmark? This is at one point in time, and I guess we should try to analyze across board what PH has done in terms of cutting mega project sizes into something more digestible. And of course, we have the $1 trillion debt that the finance ministry has been talking about, since quite soon after the May election last year. So I think that's pretty understandable. But of course, it's quite interesting, in the business circles, there's even questions about, if it's not going to be right size or right price, is there a possibility of a swap for another project? And of course, I think that people are wondering about the high-speed rail as well. So, but, this is sheer speculation. We have to see what's going to emerge.
Yu Ling, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Kor Yu Ling, an independent political economist with Sergi Enam Advisors, speaking to us about Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad's recent statement that, well, basically, if he had to pick between China and the US, he was going to go with Beijing. You can weigh in on this. You can also weigh in on, women in STEM, on gender equality or balance in the workplace. Does your workplace have it? Can I work there? Call us and let us know. 777-332-900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.